The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So one of the important hindrances that Buddhism emphasizes is the hindrance to the hindrance of fixed views, being stuck in our opinions. And part of being a Dharma practitioner is to begin to think dharmically. To have, you know, so not just go along and thinking as usually would, perhaps, but to have a little different, a new way of thinking, a new way of addressing or looking at your life. And one of those is to try to look at your life without being stuck in your views, in your opinions, in your stories of how things are. And so, how do you think in that way? One way is to carry with you a little slogan. And this can help sometimes. And the little slogan comes from a Zen teacher named Suzuki Roshi, who summarized Buddhism in three words. So it's very convenient. You can put it in your pocket. And it's very portable. Take it with you. Three words for Buddhism. And those three words are, not always so. Isn't that great? And I don't know if that's all you need to know to be a Buddhist, to become free and awake. But certainly if you just carry that with you, not always so, you're probably not going to be so quickly stuck in your views or your opinions. This is the way it is. Not always so. Maybe it's true sometimes, maybe not always so. And so if it's not always so, what other perspectives can we bring? What other ways can we understand our life? And so this is one of the ways to think dharmically is to think, what other ways can we see the situation? Maybe it's not just one way, one perspective. What other ways? What else is going on here? There's a famous story. Maybe it's been told too many times. I apologize if you've heard it too many times. But in case one of you haven't heard the story, the rest of us will hopefully be patient as I tell the story. It's a fun story of a Chinese story of a farmer, poor old farmer, who has a poor old weak horse to pull the plow. And one day, the poor old weak horse somehow escapes. And the neighbors come to the poor old farmer and say, oh, you poor person, it's going to be hard for you now without your horse. The farmer says, we shall see. And so the farmer's son goes up into the mountains and finds a wild, beautiful, young, strong stallion and brings it back. And the neighbors say, wow, you're so lucky your son found that wonderful horse. Now you have a good, strong horse, and you can plow, and things can go much better for you. And the farmer says, we shall see. And so the horse has to be broken in, and so the son begins to train the horse, but the horse throws him off the back, and he falls off the horse and breaks his leg. And the neighbors said, oh, wow, you poor farmer, how are you going to manage now without your son to help you? How are you going to manage? You know, it's not going to be hard for you. And the farmer says, we'll see. And so then the king of the land decides to go to war with the neighboring kingdom, so he recruits all the young men. But the son has a broken leg. He can't go fight. So the neighbors say, oh, you're so lucky. Your son's not going to go off to war and die or be gone for years. So what does he say? We'll have to see. So that's another way of thinking dharmically, is again, the way of not being stuck in a view or in a story is to have this idea, we'll have to see. Let's see how it goes. Let's see how it goes. The equanimity practice that's sometimes taught in Buddhism sometimes goes along with this phrase. Equanimity is this kind of equanimity is a kind of love. And so sometimes it's called a grandmotherly love. The grandmother loves the child, the grandchild, but the grandmother has seen it all before. not like first-time parents. And so they have much more equanimous about some of the childhood drama that the grandkids go through. But the first-time parents are not equanimous. So this grandmother loves, the grandmother definitely loves the kid, but it's not, you know, doesn't get all riled up or upset. So one of the ways to have this kind of equanimity the choices you make are your own. Now let's see what happens to you. I'll be here with you to see what happens. So you're making your choices, and I'm going to be present. Let's see what happens. So this openness. So one part of the idea of this dharmic way of thinking is to be curious, to be open to something unfolding. To be stuck in views is that this is the way it is, and it's not going to change. And we're not open to see how things evolve and how things develop. Let's see. Let's see how it is. I've known many people who have gone through hardships, maybe some of you probably can identify with this, that in the middle of the hardship you thought it sucked. This is really bad. How could such a terrible fortune happen to you? A year later, 10 years later, sometime later, you look back and you realize that was the best thing that ever happened to you. Because it forced you maybe to look at your values or your priorities. It forced you to reconsider your life. It allowed you to drop some of the stories that you lived by, the opinions you lived by. I've known people who were really caught up in being, it's fine to be athletic, but really caught in being athletic and fit and strong and being buff and showing themselves to the world that way as if that's really what's important, right? And then they got terribly sick or was in an accident and they couldn't be that way anymore. They became invalided or in some way, handicapped in some way. And at first they thought their life was devastated. That was it. That people would hate them, people wouldn't like them, their idea of success and recognition was all... But after some years they realized that it was the way they lived that life before was kind of shallow. And when it was taken away, it was the best thing that ever happened to them because it allowed them to drop into some deeper connection to themselves and deeper way of being in this world. I've known people who've gone on meditation retreats and had very difficult retreats. Some retreats are difficult. And at the time, they thought, well, that was a mistake. I should never come on the retreat. And then they've come back to me some months later. Remember one man came back to me about 6 months later, and he said, yes, that retreat was so hard for me, but boy, was that important and valuable. Because I learned so much about how I handle adversity and challenges. And I learned to be patient with it. And lo and behold, in the months after the retreat, all kinds of things happened in my life, and I was prepared. And I could go through it easier because of the difficulty I had on retreat. So, you know, it's not always so. You don't actually know sometimes what's really happening to you. And one way to have fixed views is to think, I know what's happening. This is terrible. Or this is wonderful. This is the best. When I was about 20 or 21, I had a great summer. Summer of 20 or something. It was really great. I was kind of ecstatic by the end of the summer. And I remember telling a friend of mine, I'll never be depressed again. Not always so. We'll have to see. And so that fall, I was more depressed than I've ever been. Just a few months later, 2 months later, you know, so, you know, you never know, right? So not to have a fixed view, this is how it is. Sometimes our difficulties are our blessings. Sometimes what seems like blessings maybe are not what we think they are. Who knows what they are? Not always so. Let's see. So those two things are kind of very important ways of thinking dharmically. And it's not telling you how to think. It's not telling you you're supposed to believe something this way. But rather it's a way of thinking that keeps your mind open to possibilities as opposed to closed to possibilities. It opens your mind to be able to see, is there a different perspective, more perspectives to look at any situation than the ones that I'm using right now? And so that's kind of the dharmic thinking outward, open to something. And one of the reasons for this, to do this, is that there's many reasons to do it. One reason is that human beings don't have a perfect track record of thinking well. thinking clearly what's going on. There's a fair percentage of delusion that goes on. And one of the delusions is fixed thinking. This is how it is. This is how it is. And one of the really strong areas of delusion has to do with self, oneself. Anything you can say, I am. And I bet there's a 50-50 chance you're deluded. When you say, I am, you know. So, I mean, you know, you could say, you know. There's certainly safe things to say, but I've talked to many people who basically the operating assumption about themselves personally is I am bad. Sometimes they're more sophisticated in the word they choose instead of bad, because that's not very sophisticated, right? But I'm lousy. I'm inadequate. I'm someone no one will love or like, or I'm a loser, or I'm, you know, some things, and we fill it in, right? And it hurts to have these kinds of views about oneself, and it hurts even more if we're fixated on it, if we're kind of stuck in that view. Not always so. Is there another perspective? We shall see. Let's see what goes on. Do we know what's happening? How can I address this? How can I meet what's going on in such a way that it opens me rather than closes me? Do you want to open the heart? Do you want to open the mind? Or not? Oh, I don't deserve to. I'm so bad. You can feel it gets heavy. But how do I look at this? So you have to, dharmic thinking is to look at it and say, how can I think about this in a different way? Because the way I'm thinking about it now, I can feel I get contracted. I can feel the weight of it. I can feel it closes something down. That's the way I'm thinking about it now. So can I think about it a different way? Can I think about it in such a way that I don't deny it, but kind of opens to a different perspective that makes me a little bit lighter and open and receptive to something different happening? So not always so. We'll see. I thought of giving this talk because someone asked me a week or so ago about doubt. And I was a little bit confused about what Buddhism had to say about doubt. And I think for some people on first takes, doubt seems like an unfortunate thing to have. It's limiting, it's kind of, it's inhibiting, it's we're indecisive, we're unsure, or something like that. It's not so good to have doubt. And that could well be. Doubt can be a great hindrance. Part of the force can be a force that closes us down and limits us. But not always so. Let's look at doubt again. Is there a way that doubt can have the opposite? Is there some way that doubt can open us up and see in a freer, more open perspective? Can we resurrect the value of doubt and not just relegate doubt to being something unfortunate and bad? How can we use doubt in such a way that to open us? So I think sometimes doubt inhibits us from looking more deeply, but sometimes doubt can be an encouragement. Let's look more carefully. Let's look again. I have doubts about what's happening, and with that doubt, let me look and understand better. Let me see if I can understand it in a different way. Let me probe and understand and discover. let me not get the doubt. For example, the doubt, there's a valuable doubt where you doubt anything that you're fixated on. You know, I'm really stuck in this view and this story and this my relationship with these people. Maybe this is the time to have doubt. Let me doubt that. What would happen if I started doubting this story I keep telling myself, this opinion I keep having? One of the things I've learned to doubt, one of the forms of doubt that I cherish now, is the view I have of people when I feel like I'm in conflict with them. I love to doubt that view. Because I have discovered, unfortunately, let's say it in a more positive way. Because the dharmic thinking sometimes is useful to kind of, not to deny and make everything kind of sweet and nice, but sometimes there's perspectives that kind of help us to go forward rather than weigh us down. So I'll offer you a different perspective of what I was going to say. I've learned that when I'm not in the presence of a person that I'm in conflict with, like they're nowhere near me, and the only relationship I have to them is with the idea I have in my head of who they are and what they did, that I have one kind of relationship to them. But if I'm in their presence, talking to them, I'm much more generous. I'm much more, I like them. I'm much more nuanced. I'm much more willing to see them in the fullness of who they are. And I'm not stuck in a narrow view. So I've learned to doubt the views I have of people when I'm in conflict with them if I'm not in their presence. Kind of give them a kind of benefit of the doubt or something. And so what I do, I don't try to pretend there's no conflict, but then I try to get myself in their presence. And I remember once some years ago, I was in a really bad conflict with someone. It was really intense. It was big, big things at stake. And I think this person was, you know, pretty angry with me. So I invited him to lunch. Let's have lunch. And he did. And so we sat down, and then we could have this talk. So very different than, you know, not getting together. So, and from that, and from other experiences, I found that conflict is a good thing. Not conflict in and of itself, but if you use what I'm calling dharmic thinking around conflict, then you see the conflict as an opportunity, not as a problem. And in fact, there's a mediator I know up in Marin County. She does conflict resolution work. She says that conflict makes her happy. Because the reason it makes her happy is that she knows that if you stay present and work it out, and she helps people work it out, find how to resolve the conflict, not only does they get back to neutral, but it gets better than neutral. They can really, it's really transformative for people to do this stuff. So part of the dharmic thinking about not getting stuck in views is to be hopeful that there is a path that opens us up. How do I find my freedom in this situation? And to have that on the forefront of your thinking. How do I find freedom in here? How do I not be stuck? And to have confidence in that is a dharmic way of thinking. An undharmic way of thinking is to not have confidence, to have kind of be discouraged, feel hopeless. There's no way out of this. I'm stuck in it. Maybe so, maybe not. Let's see. Not always so. Where can I look for the path? Can I find a path? It's not saying that, again, you have to believe in something, but it's having this curiosity, this interest, this investigation, this dedication. Let's look deeply. Let's see if I can find a way through. Can I find a way through? And if you keep that dedication in the forefront, let's find a way through. Let's keep finding a way through. Let's find a way. Chances are very, very good that you're much more likely to find it if you don't have that interest. If you're not interested, I think it's hopeless, then it is hopeless. But if you doubt your hopelessness, if you say, not always so, let's see. Let's try and see. Let's explore this. Let's show up for it. Let's go towards it. Let's meet that person. Let's try to find a way to work it out. Let's try to be with what's going on here. Then you have a good chance to find your way through. And Buddhism says that there's always a way through if you're stuck. If you're stuck in your views, if you're stuck in your story, if you're stuck in your stuff, in your suffering, there's always a way through. But it's up to you to find it. You have to kind of inquire and ask and look. So Buddhism says that one of the primary hindrances to freedom is having fixed views, fixed opinions and stories, and that one of the ways to overcome that is to adopt maybe a form of thinking that you haven't used before, a dharmic way of thinking, or a liberating way of thinking. It doesn't involve adopting a set of beliefs, but rather it's adopting kind of a practice of inquiry. And you can ask yourself, one way of dharmic way of thinking is to think, not always so. And use that at times when it opens you up. Or we'll have to see if that opens you up. Or turn towards the experience and keep and look and think and explore and feel your way. Where's the path here? How do I engage in this? How do I find my freedom with it? Just like I did when I found myself in conflict. I asked, where do I find it here? I find it by having this guy out for lunch. It wasn't exactly a comfortable lunch, but boy, it was better. For me, it was so much better than carrying it with me in my head. But there was no hope then. So, that's enough for me. Now it's your turn. Do you have any fixed views you want to present? And we'll explore it together and kind of try to think dharmically about it. Do any of you have any fixed stories or opinions that you're struggling with? Or any questions about the talk or anything else you want to bring up? Yeah, over there. And if you could use the mic, that would be helpful so that everyone can hear.
I just had a quick comment. I was thinking as you spoke that it seems like doubt is one of the many tools of the mind that, if used wisely, can really help me along.
That's right.
But if used unwisely, can really cause me to spiral, which I've done many times in my life. So.
Right. Yeah. So part of the dharmic way of thinking is to look at what's the wise ways of using whatever's going on. And maybe everything has a wise use if we take the time to figure it out. There's a wise way of relating to something. So, I mean, it's a different way of thinking that sometimes people do in Buddhist circles where certain things are seen as kind of bad. But there, maybe rather than seeing anything as bad, the task is to turn towards it and see, what's a wise way of relating to this? What's the wise way of using this? So, for example, like aversion is considered, or ill will. Aversion is considered a big hindrance in Buddhism, and you're not supposed to be aversive or have a lot of ill will. But they say in the Dharma that if you have an aversive personality, it's for purposes of Dharma practice, that's better than a desiring personality. Because if you use it right, you say no to your neurosis. You say no to your fixed views. No, I'm not going to be stuck. I'm not going to do that again. And there's a wise way of saying no. I'm not going to get caught up in that again. So it's a way of taking a tendency we have. And what's the wise way of using it? Oh, sometimes it's wise to use that tendency and saying, I'm not going to be stuck again. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, in your talk, you're talking about two people getting together to resolve a conflict, and it sort of presupposes that they're somewhat reasonable people, and you can get through that. But what happens when you deal with an absolute jerk? And the best example I can think of historically is when Neville Chamberlain was trying to deal with Hitler, and we all know how that worked out. And more to the point, more at home, I grew up with a typical neighborhood bully. There was no reasoning with him. You know, there was a
family here who used to bring their kids to IMC, yeah, to the family program. And the mother had, I think, a daughter or son, I forget who it was, who was being bullied in the schoolyard by another kid. Mm. And tried for a long time to get the school involved, and the school somehow wasn't taking care of the problem. And so finally she invited the kid over for dinner, the bully, to their home. And that took care of the problem.
Yeah, but that doesn't... I want to get back to the neighborhood Hitler
bully
example.
The Hitler, you know...
And
you know,
also,
I don't have much. That's above my pay scale.
Oh, okay. Okay, I'll just say my own personal experience. I'm a person who's been mugged 3 times, and it wasn't from hanging around wild bars or anything. I was meditating in Harvard Square, and
you were meditating in Harvard Square.
In Harvard Square, yes.
And, I would say there's a good chance of getting mugged too if you're meditating, yeah, in Harvard Square.
But I mean, like women dealing with rapists, yeah, and people getting attacked all the time. I mean, I think there's a point where you have to use force, sometimes deadly force, to get the point across. Because dealing with totally irrational people that out to do you harm, there's no way of reasoning with them at all. So
I think to go along with the theme of the talk, it would be maybe so. We'll have to see. Maybe not always so. So plenty of people have fixed views about the use of violence. And they have fixed views about the kind of injustice that you've talked about. And because of their fixed views and their righteousness or indignation or the tremendous pain and suffering that goes on, pain and suffering is another one cause for getting stuck in views. Then they can translate sometimes to fixed views about violence and what we need, what I need, and what needs to happen, and what's the right thing to do. And we have a society that's very quick in turning violent, very quick in using guns. And so we have to be very careful not to get caught up in fixed views around these kinds of issues. And so I'm much more comfortable. I mean, I feel uncomfortable offering you a fixed view one way or the other to respond to you. But I would like to suggest to be very careful around these really, really big issues and keep the heart and the mind open, because probably it's situational. Every situation is going to be different. I knew a woman who was out in the desert alone, and and she was young and very beautiful probably at that time. And she was all alone, and which I describe as survivalist, came along in the desert and couldn't believe his good luck, and pulled out his gun and was going to rape her, and she didn't know what took her, what came over her, and she said, "You're no Christian. Give me that gun." And he was so stunned, he gave her the gun, and she threw it into the bushes and ran. You know, she wasn't violent, but if she had only had been indoctrinated that in that kind of situation you have to fight and kill in order to defend yourself, she would have probably had a very different outcome. I knew a man, a friend of mine, who was held up in San Francisco by knife point, and outside of San Francisco Zen Center, and he was one of the priests there. And he was he was going to a meeting, but someone held him up, and so he engaged in a conversation with the guy. He said, "Well, you can have everything, but you know, I really need my driver's license." And they had a conversation back and forth, and one of his friends walked by and went into the meeting, and so the guy being held up after a while came into the meeting and said, "Oh, when you passed me by, I was being held up." But it looked to me like you were just having a nice conversation with this guy. So anyway, that was that story, right? So it, in some ways you say he lost his money, but he saved his life, right? Maybe that was a really good outcome. Versus the other priest at Zen Center who was held up. I don't know how he got held up, but he got held up. His response was to go home to his garage and take the revolver he had there and go chase the guy through the San Francisco, chase him into the housing projects in San Francisco. And he was standing there with his revolver looking for this guy, and the police arrested him. So you have to be, so anyway, so I'd rather not answer your questions with any kind of fixed view, except that maybe these things are situational. We'd be very careful not to have fixed views, but to be ready to think fresh and think new and to look in open ways. And
yeah, all I'm suggesting is that the examples you gave, that's great. And I've known some martial arts experts over the years, and in having conversations with them, it's interesting what they said about violence. They said, in every instance, I will try my best to talk my way out of it.
Yeah.
And one fellow said, I'll do it even in front of people where I'll look like a chicken, even though I could take the other person apart. There's a point, though, when you cannot do that, and you're just faced with, maybe this is above your pay scale. It's like the example with Chamberlain and Hitler. There's sometimes you're forced into violence, and that should be a last resort. But I just want to put that out there.
I wonder why it was so important for you to say this.
Because I think I'm looking at it holistically. There's an alternative. Avoiding violence is, like I said, is a really important thing to do. But there are times when you cannot do that.
Maybe so.
So I just want to be totally open. I think it's the best way to survive is to be totally open to all options.
I think that was kind of what I was saying.
Yeah.
You know, stay open. Stay open. Don't have a fixed view. Stay open. And but I'm a little bit sensitive around this issue because of living in such an amazingly violent culture. I don't think a lot of people are actually that open to all the options. They go towards violence so quickly. So if it's really balanced, maybe it's okay. But I feel very cautious around this issue. So we had one more person. I saw Abraham's hand right behind you.
You were saying, if I remember in your talk, that there's always an answer. In Buddhism, there's always a solution.
A path to freedom.
Yes.
Not necessarily, maybe not a solution between, you know.
I noticed my tendency to, my mind wants to take over and say, and I can find it, I can figure it out, and that has a kind of...
Oh, that sounds like more fixed views.
Yeah. As opposed to saying, which... also happens sometimes, I wonder how. I wonder what will come if I remain open. It's a lot different than saying, I have to figure this out, because that's just back into the same locked, yeah.
Abraham, that's wise. I think it's great. Thank you very much. So sometimes we don't want to, the idea of I'm going to figure it out, I'm going to find the path, is just a headache. It just causes more problems. But maybe what's the path is to be open and see what happens and be open to see what arises rather than what needs to be done. Because sometimes nothing needs to be done. Some of our problems don't get solved. They get dissolved. Okay. So I'd encourage you this week to look, don't create any fixed views, but look for places where you really have a strong opinion, or you have a story that you're living with, or a fixed view that's really hard and fast and stuck, and then see if you can try some dharmic thinking. Try to look at it in a different way. And see if there's other perspectives that open you up and help you kind of move through it, or than staying stuck. It's a great exercise. Great. Thank you all. And now, Jim, can I talk to you for a minute?